The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Our good friend Andy Burcham, voice of the Tigers, is getting on the plane right now. The plane may be leaving right now, but we're not able to check in with Andy today. So we'll listen to his broadcast tomorrow night, and then we'll check in with him again next week. We will have Jake Crane of Crane and Cone joining us at the bottom of hour number two, and we'll get his thoughts on the world of college athletics as well. Dan, how are you doing today? Oh, let me turn your mic. It'd be good if I turn the mic on.
I think I could tell you now that I'm is that the one? Is that?
Yeah.
All right. Am I showing up? Am I showing up here? Because this isn't. All right. Cool. All right. So it's. Are you here? Okay. So
yeah. I mean.
All right. Cool. I wasn't sure. I wasn't getting in my.
Oh, you're not hearing it in the headphones?
Yeah. It's all right though. Anyways, it's. I think it's better now. No, it's good. Good to see you, Bill. It's great to be here. Looking forward to talking to Jake in hour number two, and of course big basketball game tomorrow night.
Yeah, and Stephen Pearl met with the media today, and one of the obviously the first question he was asked was the Keyshawn Hall situation or the status of Keyshawn. All Stephen Pearl would say was Keyshawn practiced very well yesterday, and they hope that looking forward to another good practice from Keyshawn today. So that was not a definitive answer that Keyshawn Hall will be available tomorrow night. But I would think, Dan, it's hard for me to imagine Keyshawn not playing after we saw him in Fayetteville and saw him look engaged on the bench, and for Stephen to talk positively about the way he practiced yesterday. I wonder, I wouldn't guarantee that he would start, but I would think that, I would think it'd be a surprise if you don't see Keyshawn Hall tomorrow night.
Yeah, and they might as well start him, I imagine, if he's going to play, but, yeah, but I would think.
Well, I mean, unless this is the, the final whatever of the suspension.
I would hope he's out of the woods. Like that's, I would sort of hope that they've found a way to put this behind him. And I mean, it's against for everybody's sake. I don't think the best thing for. I don't think the best thing for Auburn moving forward this season is to try to do it without Keyshawn Hall, and I don't think the best thing for, I mean you saw that they didn't have enough offense against Arkansas. You wonder how much if they'll have enough offense in the rest of these regular season games or in any NCAA tournament games if you don't have Keyshawn Hall as part of the equation season.
No, it's hard to imagine that they would. But then on the other hand, you can't. I mean, again, we don't know the circumstances. You can't do something at the expense of the team, or not the expense of the team, but you can't sometimes just let certain things slide that might end up getting the whole situation out of control.
Some people are of the opinion that you play. Play Keyshawn Hall no matter what because of that fact. Because without him, you don't have enough offense to win the games that you're going to need to win between now and the end of the season to have the kind of season that you hope to have. I don't think that is true. Like, no matter what Keyshawn Hall has to play, I think there probably is a does the punishment fit the crime question without knowing what happened.
Without knowing the crime.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's hard to know.
It's hard to say. And I think Stephen recognizes the value that Keyshawn Hall has to his team and his offense, and made that decision anyway to sit him
right
against Arkansas, knowing full well that you're asking the other six guys to play a lot and to play well if you're going to have any chance of winning on the road in that situation. So, yeah, I would hope. I don't think the best thing for Keyshawn Hall as a guy who wants to be a pro after this season is over, I don't think the best thing for him is to have sat for an extended period of time.
Oh, no, not at all.
In the February of his senior season. I don't think it's the best thing for Auburn as they try to win games down the stretch. So, I mean, I would hope that this is behind them and that you can try to move forward to the important business of winning these, enough games to get into the NCAA tournament this year. You hope that the Keyshawn Hall story can turn a corner. If it can't, like if this thing stretches into a second game, and if you want to look at Vanderbilt, you could say a third game. I mean, it's you don't have that many games left.
Tomorrow night is the first of six final regular season games before you get to the SEC tournament. Tomorrow night's going to tell a lot, I think. I mean, how Keyshawn Hall performs, not just points-wise, but, I mean, how involved is he? How, you know, I mean, I expect to see Keyshawn Hall busting it tomorrow night. I really do. And I mean,
I didn't think effort was the problem against Vanderbilt. The problem was, I think, questionable. How about this? Questionable decision making. I think not just defensively, but also when to shoot. He had some opportunities around the basket where he didn't convert.
Right.
There were times when they sent the double team and he didn't pass his way out of it the way he should have. Like it's going to be. I think a lot of on-ball decision making is going to be under the gun for Keyshawn because there's pressure for him to play his best defense. But I don't think the defense was the primary culprit against Vanderbilt.
No, it wasn't just defense.
It's that the reliable stuff you've gotten from him this year wasn't on point.
Rebounding, and he was, as much as people would think, he never gives the ball up. No, he was one of Auburn's better assist guys.
No, he got an assist right before. He did a better job as the game went on, I thought, against Vanderbilt of passing his way out of assists or passing his way out of double teams.
Mm-hmm.
He assisted Jovic, I think, on a dunk or a basket right before he got benched. He was not hitting his shots.
No.
Like it was not, I mean, even the stuff around the basket that the teams are sort of goading him into trying. And I think there was a lot of there was increasing dialogue with the referees, which Steven didn't like either.
Yes.
And it's just a matter of, he's got a, some of it is, it's not just a decision when it's like hit your shots around the basket, but he's got to be as sharp as possible as far as deciding when to shoot and making sure there are shots he can make. And he can't be actively trying to draw the foul the way I think he was at times against Vanderbilt. Like it's you got to be, don't worry about the referees. Don't worry about the about trying to play your defender as much and just go put the shot up.
Get a good shot off. A couple of times it looked as though he could have gone ahead and made the layup and he'd hesitate seeing if he'd draw the foul and then the shot gets missed and you get nothing out of it.
Yeah.
So things like that. No, but I mean
and they could have called the Vanderbilt game differently.
They could have.
Yeah, I mean they could have said all right. Well, some of these there were a lot of I think on both sides of the Vanderbilt game there were a lot of trying to shoot through contact that just they were like, all right, well, it was the defender was close enough to legal position, whatever. They could have, you could have had a tighter whistle and it probably would have benefited Keyshawn Hall because like he was the, some of those were on him. That's not what went wrong against Vanderbilt was the officiating. It was Keyshawn Hall sort of being off his game on offense and it spiraling from there. And it's led to a DNP in the one game since then. Hopefully, he can bounce back the way I think before we learned of the suspension, the way folks were hoping he could bounce back
after Vandy
against Arkansas.
Yeah, and again, just my feeling is you're going to see an enthusiastic Keyshawn Hall getting an opportunity to play tomorrow night. I mean, we'll see. I mean, don't know how practice went today. The team was, the team practiced and then left and is now on its way to Starkville. But Auburn needs Keyshawn Hall. There's no question about that.
Yeah, what else do you think changes from the Arkansas game? Or do you think reinserting Keyshawn Hall is a significant enough difference that you hope that it's going to be able.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they just need, Kevin Overton needs to make shots. Elijah Freeman made a couple of shots down the stretch, and we talked with Elijah. You hope he can get something going. Auburn needs more than a couple of guys being able to be offensive threats, and Keyshawn Murphy has stepped up. He's not going to get as many opportunities. I mean, look, Tahad and Keyshawn aren't going to be able to score 50, you wouldn't think, again, with Keyshawn Hall back in there, but they need at least three players being productive offensively. As they head down this stretch of games that are winnable. Look, one thing Steven reminded everybody of today is, these last six games have all been against, very quality teams in which Auburn went 2-4. They're going to have opportunities against teams that haven't been as successful and aren't as talented here down the stretch, and they've got to play well on both ends of the court. And if they do, they can win at least four of these last six.
Yeah, I mean, I think without Keyshawn Hall offensively, you're going to have things are clogged up around the basket defensively. Like teams are putting guys in the paint and sort of daring Auburn to fight through it.
Mm-hmm.
Even without even with Keyshawn Hall, you're facing some of that. But Keyshawn Hall is one of the players that gives you an outside threat to sort of shoot over the top of that kind of defense. Without him, there's defenses can throw a ton of pressure at Tahad. They can throw a ton of pressure at Overton and sort of dare anyone else who wants to play on the perimeter. Sebastian, Keyshawn Murphy, Elijah, Jovich, anybody else who wants the ball on the perimeter, defenses will sort of they'll settle for like if one of those guys gets hot from three, then you readjust.
Yeah.
But until they do, I think you're comfortable sort of daring those those Auburn players to beat you at the perimeter. And any one of those players can – we haven't seen it from Jovich, but the other three guys have shown the ability to hit threes at times this year. Mm-hmm. But do you want to base your offense around those three guys hitting jump shots?
And I'd rather have most of those guys being near the basket and be able to try to rebound if you miss a shot.
Sure. And for defenses, I think they'll absolutely, like, considering this Auburn offense, it's like, yeah, if this possession ends with a now again, if one of those guys gets hot, then you'll readjust, but a Seb jumper or a Murphy jumper, it's like that's probably a win for the defense.
Yeah, Keyshawn Murphy is hitting a decent percentage, but he's only taken 32 threes mm-hmm. all year. So, I mean, it's not as though you don't know if the sample size – I like his shot, but I would rather Keyshawn be closer to the basket.
That's what Auburn was going to need against Arkansas. Without Keyshawn Hall, you were going to need some of those guys to get hot. Instead, they were just – I mean, it was not a good game offensively.
No, Tahad and Keyshawn Murphy, and that was it.
Yeah,
as far as having decent offensive games. I mean, mentioned Elijah hit a couple of shots late. I still think he was 3-for-10 from the floor, and KO was 1-for-13. So, I mean, it was a really, really rough night there. We'd love your thoughts on Auburn basketball, anything you want to talk about. Auburn baseball, we'll preview the matchup of Auburn and Cincinnati coming up this evening. And again, Jake Crane joins us in hour number two. So we're wide open until then. Love for you to join in as we're just underway here on the Tuesday Drive.
AU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
I don't hear me now. Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio today. Drew's out today. I believe he'll be back tomorrow, but it's Bill and Dan here in the studio. And again, no Andy today because the team and broadcast crew are en route to Stark. Will you say en route or en route?
En route.
En route, but I say route a lot of times.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll say, I'm looking at a route, but I'll say en route.
Yeah, it's French, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's en français.
En route.
En français.
Yes. Yeah.
Très bien, Bill.
Yeah. So no Andy.
On Mardi Gras, no less.
That's exactly right.
That's right. On a little.
I had on purple earlier today.
A little French for everybody on Mardi Gras. I'm going to Mobile next weekend, so I'm missing it by that much.
Oh
right?
Yeah, no kidding.
Last game of the season for the Trojans is in Mobile against
Mobile,
South.
That's so. Right. The where Mardi Gras debuted in the States.
That's right, folks. And as someone who grew up not too far from there, right?
Man, I sort of had it all. I mean, I was born in Brazil, so we had Carnival, and then moved to New Orleans, mm-hmm. and then from New Orleans to South Alabama. So it's like,
wow.
Oh yeah. Saw an awful lot as a young innocent child.
That's
I mean a lot.
That is, yeah. I mean that's something. I mean now you got the internet, right? So I mean
yeah,
you see everything.
Right. You can see it all.
But back then
it was
rare. It was rare to see to see everything like that. No, so it's
happy Tuesday.
And a safe, right? Hope everybody observes a safe Fat Tuesday and yeah, with some with baseball playing tonight as well.
Yeah, gonna spend Tuesday night over at the ballpark this evening. What? I think a lot of the family's going to be there tonight.
You got to see a lot of the action this weekend. What did you think? I mean,
wowed me. It
let's
really
start
did.
There, yeah.
I obviously want to see them against some other teams, but I mean, I couldn't ask for Man, I couldn't ask for a better performance. Butch Thompson was Butch was just thrilled at the pitcher's abilities. You know, he has harped on it for the last few years. Strikes. Shove the strike zone. Strike. And they got 70% strikes from all the starters, and they weren't fat. It's Fat Tuesday. There weren't many fat pitches, though. I mean, Jake Marciano grooved a fastball, and credit Youngstown State for hitting it out of the ballpark. But, I mean, they were throwing strikes, but not just laying the balls into the strike zone. Mixing pitches up, down, in, and out. I was really impressed there. I fully believe this team's going to hit the ball. They're gonna hit the ball with authority. And they had some balls that were hit hard early, but look, they were facing as Youngstown State, like Tex was saying yesterday. I didn't know it was their plan. Sometimes teams just don't have the guys with the big arms, the guys that can bring it mid-90s and up. But Youngstown State came in throwing a lot of junk, and they did a good job of throwing their off-speed stuff for strikes and throwing fastballs when you didn't expect it to be a fastball. So they kept the hitters off balance, and you're going to see a lot of teams that are really sort of gearing up for conference play, expecting to see guys throwing mid to upper 90s. When they face somebody whose fastball's 86 to 88, they can take a little off and bring a change off of that. It takes a while. It's like going from fast pitch to slow pitch softball sometimes. It can mess with your timing.
The lineup, I think, is the reason that folks are so excited about the team in general, just based on returning production and what's been proven in college baseball with this team. The pitching staff is full of potential, and so for the pitching staff to be as sharp as they were opening weekend, granted it's Youngstown State, but still, I mean, there are other teams around college baseball that did not get those kind of performances from their pitchers this week.
Oh, no, you're right.
Even though they were playing
lesser opponent,
exactly.
lesser opposition.
So it's a good sign, and I mean, you always assume, I think, with Butch that he knows what he's doing with the pitching staff, and he can spot guys that can help him in the offseason, and he can help them develop into guys that can help him during the season. Sure seems like he's got – I mean, because we're not even talking – like I think throughout last year, if you'd been asked to identify guys that profile as important pitchers for Auburn in 26 – you'd have mentioned Chatterton.
You would have mentioned Alvarez.
You'd have mentioned Alvarez, and you didn't see either of those guys
right
this weekend. So that's really impressive that Auburn was able to, dig a little bit deeper into its staff from last year and get some new players to contribute, and just really really impressive stuff in all three games from the Auburn starters.
Well, to go, they went 16 innings. The three starters went 16 innings. I believe they allowed 5 hits, 1 walk, and had 29 strikeouts. Yes. I mean, that's just phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, even and I know, like, acknowledging that it's Youngstown State, it's a D1 opponent with some with hitters that are going to, I mean, watch how they play this year. So, I mean, again, how does it translate to this weekend is a big question. Right, because you're going to have some facing some major conference
big-time
opponents.
Competition. Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, I don't know what to expect, and I was going to count on Andy a little bit for this, but we'll do some more research. Jason will know for sure.
Yeah, you'll bump into him tonight.
By the way, Jason's on doing color tonight with Brad Law on the game, which will be on Wings 94.3. 5:45 should be the airtime. 6 o'clock first pitch. But yes, I don't know what to expect from Kansas State, but you know that Florida State and Louisville, year in and year out, field really good teams.
Excellent teams. I mean, those are two perennial conference championship type contenders. And so for Auburn, it's good to get these kind of games. I think you can look at the computer rankings and you can think about like NCAA tournament stuff. When you're in the SEC, you play so many quad one games in league play that a couple extra ones in February, I don't think it's going to have a huge impact. It's not like basketball. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think a couple of games is going to have – you play – because you're going to play so many good opponents in the SEC, home and on the road, that it just – I think that your computer numbers will kind of wash out there if you're grappling for position in the NCAA tournament by the end of the season. But on a more practical level, this team has a bunch of guys that are in new roles or are trying to get their feet wet in D1 baseball. Being able to face guys like this before you get into conference play feels like it has you don't want the best bats you've ever seen to be that first weekend of SEC play.
Oh no.
Right? And suddenly you get this reality check where you think you were fantastic for the first 10, 12 games of the season, beating up on teams that aren't the same level as your conference opposition, and then you get into conference play and you realize that you can't really swim in the deep end of the pool quite yet.
No, I mean, and you don't want to be facing only pitchers that throw 75 to 85 either, because when you get in there and you face somebody that's 95, you'll be so far behind, it'll be ridiculous.
Yeah, I think in basketball and maybe even in football, like it's sort of overblown, the idea of you really need to face a lot of you need to get your feet wet with opposition
quality competition.
Yeah, well like opposition like the kind that you're going to face in conference play. You know, familiarizing yourself with that. I think that you can find ways to do that while still trying to get sharp against overmatched opponents. In baseball, I could see like with this team, with so much being new, like these guys probably need some reps against SEC level competition before you get into SEC play. Like, I can see the benefit of that.
And they're going to get some of that this weekend.
They're going to get some of that tonight.
They may get it tonight. I mean, yes, Cincinnati's power four. They're 2-1 coming in. They took 2 out of 3 at Jack State this past weekend.
So, it's a Cincinnati team that's probably enjoying being down south and getting some – I mean, even with the rain on Sunday – probably better. I mean, you could probably check the real feel in Cincinnati right now.
Yeah,
but
I'm sure it's been a little chillier in Cincy than it has been in the state of Alabama. It's been so warm this week. It's been crazy.
Oh, I think these guys they must have enjoyed being able to practice in this weather and getting some games in as well. And their trip through the South continues with a visit to Auburn tonight. Hopefully a good crowd for Fat Tuesday.
Yeah, it should be. Let's see. They've got it's 250 hot dogs and $5 beer.
Oh, cool.
and free orange and blue beads tonight.
Oh, that's fun. 250 hot dogs.
Yeah.
That'll get you in the door.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, maybe might get me in the so Bill, you don't have any extra tickets laying around, right?
As a matter of fact, we used them all.
All right, I can make some calls.
All right, we're coming up on our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join us. Anything on your mind sports-wise. Again, Jake Crane will join us in about an hour. Until then, we're wide open. So come on in here on the Tuesday Drive.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here on this Tuesday afternoon. 334-321-1390. That is the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. A light schedule in the SEC tonight. I guess the biggest ball game is Georgia Kentucky tonight of the three games on tap for tonight. You've got South Carolina at Florida. That shouldn't be, you wouldn't think, much of a matchup. That's the early game, 6 o'clock on the SEC network. Georgia Kentucky is one of the 2 8 o'clock games. It's an ESPN game, and then the other 8 o'clock game on the SEC network is LSU at Texas. So, I mean, not the most exciting night in SEC action, except for that Georgia-Kentucky game. I mean, Georgia has, they've been sort of hot and cold, on and off. Are they going to be in? Are they going to make the tournament? Or, where do they stand right now? I mean, they're – Aren't they sort of bubblish?
Georgia
right now?
Georgia's one of the last teams in right now.
That's
probably
what I mean.
They would not want to take in
very
much,
close to bubblish.
Yeah,
yes.
would not want to take on more water. Florida's in first place in the SEC. Yeah. They're 10-2. You've got Arkansas one game behind Florida, and then you've got a bunch of 8-4 teams.
A lot of 8-4 and 7. I mean, you've got what is it, 7 or 8?
I mean, Florida,
8-4 and 7-5 teams.
Florida needs to start losing for this thing to get more interesting.
Yes,
and they've got. I mean, Florida this week has South Carolina at home, and they're at Oxford on Saturday. So you feel like they've got two chances.
Yeah,
to,
they should be 12-2. You would think after this week.
They go to Austin next week. That's the midweek, and then they've got Arkansas at home on the 28th. That's a game we talked about a little bit earlier. Like that's if Arkansas and Florida can keep winning, Arkansas could bump into first place with a win at Florida at the end of the month. Arkansas hasn't won the regular season title in the SEC in over 30 years. Arkansas would have to keep winning for that to happen.
Yeah,
they've got. Are they at Alabama or are they hosting Alabama tomorrow night? I forget if that game is that game.
I thought they were at.
That game is in Tuscaloosa tomorrow night. So they've got, you know, the order for Arkansas to keep winning.
They've got to win a couple of really tough road games.
As a pretty tall order tomorrow night, you know, going to beat an 8-4. And by the way, Alabama would be in second place in that if Alabama beat Arkansas, then all of the four-loss teams would be in a tie for second place behind Florida right now. Then they'd be two back of Florida, but there'd be like beating Arkansas would get Alabama into a tie for second place.
Yeah, I was going to say. SEC. I mean, the tiebreaker would be crazy to try to figure out because it could be five teams there.
Yeah, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, Alabama, and Kentucky are all 8-4 right now,
and none of those teams play each other right now either. So yeah, there is a possibility there. If Alabama wins at home, it's very likely that you could have a five-way tie for second, two games back of Florida.
Arkansas is 9-3. They're one game up on all four of those teams, and then Arkansas is one game back of 10-2 Florida. So I mean, Florida's in pole position right now because they look like they're going to be favored down the stretch. I mean, Florida goes to Rupp the last game of the season. But until then, it's hard to identify a game where they're not going to be favored. Their road games are Ole Miss and Texas, and the home games are South Carolina,
Arkansas,
and Mississippi State the last week of the season.
Yeah.
And so like Florida.
So you'd figure if Arkansas loses another game, it's going to be very tough for anybody to catch Florida because it's hard to imagine Florida losing more than two more games if they lose those.
Now, Florida blows a tire between now and the Kentucky game. And Kentucky were to keep winning, the thought of Kentucky being a game back of Florida.
Say Arkansas were to beat the Gators.
Or Texas. Texas in Austin.
Yeah, Texas
next week.
7-5.
I mean, even Ole Miss this weekend in Oxford. Like, I mean, I think going on the road, Florida is a team probably more than anyone else in the league right now. We were saying this about Auburn a little bit earlier because of last year's team. Like, you can expect to get other teams' best shot.
Oh,
like
yeah.
There are some teams that remember.
They're defending national champs who are leading your conference right now.
Florida's getting, like between now and the end of the season, Florida goes on the road to Oxford and Austin, Texas, and it's like you're going to get the best shot of the opponent in those games. And then it would be great for drama if Kentucky still had a shot to win the league the last game of the regular season, and they have Florida at Rupp Arena.
Especially after the way things started. I mean, there was so much concern and criticism of Mark Pope and what's going on at Kentucky.
Now, Kentucky would probably have to win out for that to happen.
I think they would.
I don't think you're talking about a team with five losses in SEC play being in the picture for the regular season. You need Florida to lose a lot between now and the end of the season. Probably Arkansas, too. Because you need Florida to keep losing, but you would need Arkansas to pick up.
You're going to need a bunch of other people to sort of lose around.
Like, you need Arkansas to beat Florida but lose two other games.
Yeah, they need to lose to Alabama, then have Alabama lose another game somewhere, and then, it's one of those things. I mean, it's going to be crazy, though. The seeding for the SEC tournament is going to be wild because there's so many teams that are right there with each other. Like I said a few minutes ago, look, Vandy, Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, you mentioned they're all 8-4. Missouri, A&M, and Texas are all 7-5.
Kentucky could win out with this schedule. Kentucky's got Georgia at home. They go to Auburn this weekend. They go to South Carolina next week. They host Vanderbilt, and they go to College Station before the Florida game.
But yeah, earlier that might, that looked a little tougher.
Right.
But, you know, but when A&M was really playing well and Auburn was on a four-game winning streak.
But Vanderbilt's the only team.
And Vandy has sort of slid a little.
Of those five, Vanderbilt's the only one in the picture when we're talking about the teams with four losses or fewer in SEC play.
Vandy's got a pretty tough schedule.
Have a tough schedule. Vandy's got some – I mean, Vandy's 21-4. They've got Missouri tomorrow night.
At Missouri, right?
They go to Missouri tomorrow night. They host Tennessee this weekend. They go to Rupp Arena before the season's over.
And that is tough. I mean, those are three of the top upper half of the league
teams. And they close at Tennessee.
Yes.
So
four of their six are against teams in the upper half of the league right now.
Vanderbilt's got some tough games between now and the end of the season. So, no, I would think that Florida, until they lose again, should feel pretty good about their chances of winning the SEC regular season title. Now, a loss opens the door to, because especially if that loss is before Kentucky, right? Like if Florida were to lose a regular season game before they go to Rupp Arena at the end of the season, then you're suddenly talking about, okay, well, there's a path to four losses for Florida. That the home game against Arkansas, we just mentioned the road games, you know, Ole Miss and Texas. Like if they were to lose one of those, and Kentucky were to keep winning, and Arkansas were to keep winning, suddenly, like, this thing could get congested at the end, and you could be talking about co-champions, or you could be talking about a winner-take-all game at the end of the season between Florida and Kentucky. The way Florida's been playing lately, the way Florida's played since Auburn beat them, that it just, I mean, I don't know if they're going to, they don't seem like a team that's going to slip up right now. We'll see. I mean, that's what these next couple of games will have. I don't think they're, I mean, look, South Carolina tonight at home would be astonishing.
That'd be a shock,
They seem like the kind of team that's pretty locked in, and they're not going to slip up on the road against inferior competition. But this is, I mean, road games are tough.
Oxford
and Austin are.
But you know, one of the things we've talked about a lot this year, Florida's got a lot of guys that have been playing for a while.
Yeah.
They don't have that many. They have a few newcomers, but their newcomers have played elsewhere, and they fit in pretty well with this team.
Last year's Auburn team didn't slip up on the road against teams with inferior competition. Like if you had the horses, you know, if you were Alabama or Florida or Tennessee, right? Like you could hang with Auburn, like that was one thing, but it wasn't Cinderella's, catching Auburn.
It wasn't bottom dwellers or people down there that were going to be able to surprise you, because those guys have been through it, and they know what to expect when they go on the road, and they're very businesslike about it.
But with Arkansas at home and Kentucky on the road at the end of the season, I think there is still a reasonable path to four losses for Florida, and four losses for Florida opens up a lot of possibilities here. It could be Arkansas wins the league by itself.
Well, obviously, there are five other teams that right now have four or fewer losses.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's still, like, right now it feels like Florida, but there are other teams that will have a say in that between now and the end of the season.
We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Again, don't know if Keyshawn Hall is going to be available, but it surely didn't sound like there's any reason to think he's not making the trip after he made the trip this past week to Fayetteville. And like Stephen Pearl said, he had a great practice yesterday and was going to practice again today. So that sounds encouraging for the return of Keyshawn. And then Auburn needs to just take care of business. They are a better team than Mississippi State. Now, State has got some guys, as Stephen pointed out today, in their win over Ole Miss, they hit double-digit threes for just the third time this season, and they're 3-0 in those games when they have hit double-digit threes. And, of course, Josh Hubbard can go off for 30. I think he scored back-to-back. He's had 30 in back-to-back games for the Bulldogs.
Yeah, we said it at the top of the show. It would be concerning if this Keyshawn Hall thing. And I know you mentioned, like, well, maybe he comes off the bench. Like, I would think if this thing bleeds into this game, it's concerning that they haven't been able to just put it all behind them, right? And I would think, like, you need Keyshawn Hall, not just against Mississippi State, but I think the rest of this season.
Well, you really need him. Yeah, I mean, you hope you win regardless tomorrow night, but you're definitely going to need him Saturday night against Kentucky.
Sure, and with Tahad rounding into form and playing his best basketball of the season over the last couple of games, which I think might be kind of obscured by the losing streak.
Yeah, I think it has. I mean, he's had three straight 20-point games, but Auburn's lost all three of those games.
If you can add Keyshawn Hall's – and those have been – one of those games was Keyshawn Hall's worst game of the season, and another one of those games was a game where Keyshawn Hall didn't play.
Right.
So it's like if you could get some of what was working so well for Keyshawn Hall earlier this season, and you could find a way to make it merge with this, you know, the upward trend in Todd Pettifer's game.
And Keyshawn Murphy. I mean, we've seen him. We heard that he, you know, wasn't completely healthy early on the season, and he has played better as the season has gone along. And you know, that's what Auburn needs. Like I said a little while ago, they need Murph, Kevin Overton, somebody, you know, they need a couple of other guys to be able to step up so it's not just a two-man show.
And I would love for one of those guys being asked to step. Like, if you can try to relieve the pressure offensively on Kevin Overton and allow him to be, like, a guy who can conserve as much energy as possible for his role as the
perimeter defender?
Yeah, the primary defender of the ball. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that would be, like, it would, like, because asking him to do a lot on both ends of the floor was clearly, it was a bridge too far against, you know, this weekend against Arkansas. You've seen him be productive offensively, but I think he's got to be like a 3-and-D piece. And that's where if you can ask the other guys to do a lot of the heavy lifting offensively, I think Kevin Overton can pull his weight defensively. But when he has to be a huge part of the show on both ends of the floor, and you don't really go to the bench very much in the backcourt.
Yeah, and you're having to play 35-plus minutes.
Yeah,
it's tough.
And that's another place where you maybe feel Keyshawn Hall's absence a little bit is you know, how much usage some of those other guards have to take on offensively on top of their defensive responsibilities. And so, yeah, I mean, I think you saw some of that with Denver, right, where they felt pretty comfortable giving Denver a pretty light load at times offensively, knowing how important he was going to be to the defensive picture. And I wonder if they could embrace some of that with Kevin Overton. You need Keyshawn Hall playing well on offense in order to do that. Plus, it gives you...
Yeah, last year with Denver, though, you had other guys. You had more players that you knew you could figure. You just about count on double figures out of at least three other guys. And then when you needed Denver to step up, he could. And was able to go off for 20 plus a few times.
If you could count on double figures from your three most experienced guys, I mean, I know Overton's more experienced too, but like if you're talking about Key, and Tahad, if you could count on double figures every night from the Keyshawns and Tahad Pettiford, you would think that gives you a path, maybe even more than just double figures, right?
Yeah. Like I don't, because we saw that in what was it the Vandy game? The Vandy game, he had five players in double figures, but nobody had more than 13.
Yeah, and you barely...
Well, Tahad did, and then there was like 13, 11, 10, 10, 10.
And you barely had any off the bench,
right,
too, I mean, in that game, which is... I would hope that for everyone's sake, they can get Keyshawn Hall back on the floor and playing well, because it's not addition by subtraction. It's not, you take Keyshawn Hall off the floor and it unlocks the offensive potential for a lot of other guys. Maybe that's true and it's just a one-game sample size, didn't prove it out against Arkansas. But I didn't see any indication, right, that it's like, oh, well, you pull Keyshawn Hall off the floor and it secretly makes the offense better by creating opportunities for...
That doesn't work.
And you've seen basketball players like that before, right? Like, you've seen instances where it's surprisingly addition by subtraction when a ball-dominant volume shooter is out of the lineup. That's not what happened without Keyshawn Hall available on Saturday night. And instead it feels like a winnable game slipped away because there was, you know, something behind the scenes that kept Keyshawn Hall from playing and allow, you know, made the coaching staff decide to sit him down.
Look, this team is still talented enough, and we've seen it. They can beat just about anybody in this league. They've gone down to Florida and won. They destroyed Arkansas the first time these two teams played. So I mean, the talent is there. What you hope is that this decision, this sitting of Keyshawn Hall, is something that brings them together, that Keyshawn gets back out there and becomes more of a leader on the court. And if that's the case, then you know, this team could, I mean, they could make a run. There's no question. They're on a four-game losing streak, but the possibilities are there in front of them. It just got to go ahead and get started tomorrow night. Let's get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us, 334-321-1390, here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final few minutes of hour number one. Again, baseball coming up 6 o'clock tonight. We have the starting lineup for the Tigers, very similar to game three of the Auburn-Youngstown State matchup. Eric Guevara leading off at third base.
Love his bat at leadoff. Wish it wasn't because of an injury to Chris.
Oh, Chase, yeah, to Chris Rembert. Yeah.
He's ready for action as soon as the season starts.
See ball, hit ball, and we'll hit it where it's pitched. I mean, wherever on the field.
A bat that would play at, like, any time in baseball history.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
Like, just a guy. And the fact that he can play shortstop, too. Mm-hmm. Is that where he is?
He's at third tonight. He's at third tonight. Bub Terrell's batting second in left field. Bub broke out there on Saturday as well. Did I say Sunday? I meant Saturday in the second game of the doubleheader.
Originally scheduled for Saturday.
Yes. Chase Frelick hitting third and catching. Lucas Steele is your cleanup hitter, DHing tonight. Cade Ballou batting fifth and center. Todd Clay back at first, batting sixth. Mason McCrane, the true freshman brother, is in right field and batting seventh. His brother, Brandon, is at second and hitting eighth. And then Ryan Farber is at shortstop and hitting ninth. And Andreas Alvarez, who really was impressive last year as a midweek starter and then pitched very well in the, you know, down the stretch for the Tigers, getting his first start, making his first appearance of the season tonight. I'm looking forward to seeing Andreas after, I thought, a really solid freshman year. He had as good a freshman year for Auburn as a lot of players had, as far as a pitcher is concerned, because that freshman pitchers, it's less likely that they're going to put up the outstanding numbers that some young hitters do.
Yeah, we came out of last season thinking that, I mean, obviously college athletics is what it is, and there's going to be a lot of new additions to your roster. We thought Alvarez felt like one of the safer bets to be a big part of the 26 mm-hmm. rotation. Doesn't appear opening weekend, but is getting the start midweek against Cincinnati.
Boy, the pressure's on after the three starts against Youngstown, isn't it? It's like, okay, your turn. Go out and twirl five or six innings of, you know, hardly any base runners. All right, we've got the top of the hour break coming up. Still time for you to join us. Jake Crane joins us at the bottom of the hour.
Jerry, we will get to you if you hang on.
Hold on, Jerry. You'll be up first in hour number two of the Tuesday Drive.
Here while your favorite
Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio on another nice-looking day. Good day for baseball, and we've got that coming up in just about an hour. The pregame at 5:45, and then the play-by-play starting at 6 o'clock over on Wings 94.3. Brad Law with Jason Caldwell on the color, and Jason will be in tomorrow as Dan's got Troy women's basketball tomorrow, but
second to last home game of the season for the Trojans tomorrow as they welcome South Alabama into Trojan Arena.
How many more regular season games?
Four. We got two this week, two next week.
So next week you're on the road.
Next week I'm on the road for the last two, including Arkansas State, who's a game out of first place. So they'll be on their game next weekend with Troy. But yeah, looking forward to Jason and Brad tonight on Wings 94.3. And then tomorrow night, Andy and Randall will have the call from Starkville, Auburn,
right.
Mississippi State.
That is right. And Jason Caldwell should be with us in hour number one tomorrow. And looking forward to Adam Cole making a return here on the drive. Adam, of course, now with the Montgomery Advertiser.
That's right.
So that's tomorrow's show. But right now, we've got Jerry, who's been hanging on the drive hotline. Let's go ahead and get to him. Hey, Jerry, thanks for holding on.
Hey, bud.
Yeah, just a couple of things. You know, as far as the basketball team, you know, I'm like everybody else. You know, you get frustrated with, you know, four straight losses, and you know, Coach Pearl and those guys, they're a lot more frustrated than probably we are as fans. And but you know, I had to think. You know, I guess my expectations were a little somewhat high, but I thought about it throughout the year, and you know, you look what we lost last year. I mean.
Yeah,
and Ibrahim and Carwell, you know, we came within, 2 minutes of playing for a national title. You know, if Jani Broom would have been hurt, I think we might would have, you know, won the whole thing. And so, you know, that's tough to replace. That's
and Miles and
exactly,
Denver and Chaney and Chad. Mm-hmm. I mean, my goodness.
Exactly. And that team last year, you know, I mean, they, you know, the experience combined with the experience they had, and they gelled so together. So, you know, they were played as a team because they'd been playing together for a couple of years, you know, and then, you know, Denver and those guys came in and they just blended so well on Chaney. And that takes time. You know, that was a veteran team last year. This team here, brand new team, you know, different guy, you know, Tahad, the only returning, you know, starter, or at least bench player coming back. So that's a lot to, you know, take in for a, you know, especially a first year, you know, head coach, even though he'd been assistant, you know, for years. So you know, I wish we need to give Steven, you know, Coach Pearl, you know, this is just his first year, and you know to pump the brakes on the, you know, folks that are, you know, getting down on them, you know, saying like, oh, we made a mistake, what have you. You know, it's just his first year, and, you know, we're still in contention for a tournament bid, you know, with his last few ball games. So we have to see what happens. But as far I was going to comment, and I'll hang up, but this year's Butch Thompson's baseball team, you know, and I'm not a, you know, baseball coach or expert of any stretch of the imagination, but this team really looks loaded, especially with pitching, and that, you know, they could be up there with anybody as far as this team looks like a team that could not only get to Omaha, that could win it all. And I know that's a, you know, long season ahead, that's going through the SEC, and it's going to be very difficult, obviously, to, you know, to get to Omaha, you know, but this is a team, I think they have a chance, as good a chance as anybody in the country of winning the whole thing this year. I just, you know, the way they set up, I really do. And I'm looking forward to, you know, watching them the rest of the season. And but anyway, but I appreciate it. Thanks, guys. War Eagle.
Good hearing from you, Jerry. I mean, I can't argue that the talent on this team, I think this roster is deeper, and it's interesting. I mean, I think what a lot of folks thought was, well, the bats are going to have to carry this team early. And look, I mean, they've only played one series, and we don't know, you know, how Youngstown State is going to, you know, how they're going to hit the ball all year long. But what a great sign it was that Auburn pitchers were able to go out and throw strikes and, you know, not put runners on base. I mean, the last few years, it's been so frustrating at times to see the free passes and things like that. And it's tough to defend, tough to play defense when your pitcher's not throwing strikes, when you're standing there watching ball, you know, the high pitch counts and walks and things like that. This team, yeah, they had an explosion in the final game of that three-game series against Youngstown State. I don't think that's going to be uncommon. I think they're going to hit the ball. It's going to be tough for a while. It's a shame Chris Rimbert is out for a little while, but Offensively is where I just think this team's loaded. I mean, I think, you know, Butch has talked about it. They've got a dozen or more players that they feel like they can put out there, and they're SEC-caliber hitters. And I think that's something you're going to see a lot of. But I am excited about just the depth of this pitching staff. To have a guy, like we were talking about a while ago, have a guy like Andres Alvarez getting his first start here midweek. He's a guy that could be a weekend starter. Christian Chatterton, who was a weekend starter at times last year, you know, hasn't even thrown yet. I think I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the plan to come in and piggyback Andreas tonight. But and then Griffin Graves, who was really good in the postseason last year, little lefty, who was by all accounts so impressive in the preseason workouts. He'll be back in a couple of weeks and add another guy to that pitching depth. So yes, I have to agree. I think this is as deep a team. Now, you've already got, you know, Chris trying to come back from that sprained ankle, and you know injuries can change everything. But if these guys can stay healthy, look, the expectations are absolutely that, to make a run to Omaha. They hosted a super regional for the first time last year, and they've got a lot of players back who were on that team.
Jerry pointed out, he was talking about basketball and baseball, and I do think the common thread here is, like, the reason that you're seeing, among other things, the reason you're seeing this basketball team take its lumps this season, and the reason that this baseball team is so highly touted going into the 26th season, it's returning production.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Auburn has practically no returning production in men's basketball. They've gone out and attracted some really, really quality players in the portal, but it's taken some time for this thing to all gel, and some of the acquisitions haven't worked out. And you've had to readjust and pivot from what you thought you were going to get to what you're actually getting from some of these players. And so, yeah, I mean, that's something that that tends to happen more when you're talking about a guy that you're bringing in from outside the program. And you're like, let's see how he fits in, as opposed to somebody that you saw for a year and you were able to assess within the program, and then you decided, okay, bring him back. Sometimes guys fall off a cliff after playing a couple of years, but generally it's not the case. And that's why for Steven, no matter how this season ends, within reason, it seems like next year there will be expectations, in part because
you hope that you've got some carryover from this year, some players returning. We've talked about if they could bring back, you know, five or six guys just to have, you know, a core that you're not having to learn those guys while you're adding new players to it.
Right. And five would be, of the seven in the rotation right now, five have eligibility left.
Mm-hmm.
Murph and Keyshawn Hall are seniors.
Right.
The other five guys have at least 1 year of eligibility left and could come back, you know, for next year. And then, of course, you have guys that aren't in the rotation right now: Walker, Magwood, Aporum,
right?
Bashir, right? Like, you know, I feel like it would be tough, unless you saw something between now and the end of the season, it would be tough to go into next year with those guys slotted.
Oh, expecting. Yes.
It would be difficult to do that. But you could have them as options as mm-hmm. well, depending on what happens. But it's, yeah, I mean, and for Steven, the thought of going into next year, as tempting as it's been for some people to say, all right, well, this group doesn't have it, start over, reshuffle the deck. It's like, I don't think for Steven Pearl, like, year two, you want to have 10 new players? Like, you want to be doing this again?
No.
With 10?
No. And that's not even a most likely no, probably no. Absolutely no,
yeah.
You don't want to have 10 new players again next year.
Yeah, I mean, I understand how tempting that is, because, you know, hey, you might get dealt
a couple. Oh, we're going to get better ones, but there are no guarantees.
Yeah, you might get dealt a couple of aces, but you might also get a couple of jokers,
mm-hmm.
right? You might also you might also get rags in year two, and then it's like, all right, well, what do you do then? And if that happens, like, how do you fix that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, what's your plan then? Go get 10 new ones for year three? Like, that's gonna be like,
you may be getting more than the 10 new ones. You may have to get, you know,
a whole bunch
new ones, including the whole bench.
It's yeah. No, I mean, I'm just saying, like, so it would you would hope that this that something is being built here, mm-hmm. that involves some guys that are here for more than 1 year and are going to be part of the plan next year. Selfishly, I'd love for Tahad to decide that another year of college basketball is the best thing.
For his at
intern.
Auburn.
Another, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Like
that's the other thing you've got to, just because guys have eligibility doesn't mean they're going to be back.
That's true. I mean, but generally, when you're talking about, like, all right, you're keeping your coach, you're mm-hmm. you know, you've been able to establish some roots here. Like, man, you've got playing time lined up next year. Like, there would be the thought that for a Jovich or especially for the starters, you know, for a Freeman or a Sebastian Williams Adams, like there's the thought that maybe, and then of course Tahad and Overton have decisions to make too. But it's like, you know, the thought those guys could be part of something that's being built. It's really exciting. And the reason why Butch Thompson has a baseball team that folks look at, and I mean, his ability to retain some of those young guys that excelled last year, and granted, I mean, it's a different situation because last year wasn't year one for Butch Thompson, but Butch Thompson has so many of these young guys back,
right.
And it's a big reason why folks are so excited about what's going to happen in the sophomore season for Chris and Chase and Bub and the rest of the guys that were freshmen last year.
I mean, you just look, I mean, for the last couple of years, Auburn has had very highly touted signing classes, and you've seen those guys start, I mean, they produced. I mean, when Eric Guevara and Cade Ballou have been healthy, they put up big numbers. But the three that everyone knows about, with Chris Rembert, Chase Frelick, and Bub Terrell as freshmen. But there are other guys from that class, too, that are just now getting the opportunity. So, you know, everybody can't make that move from high school to college and produce and be, you know, all conference caliber as a freshman. For a lot of guys, it takes a year or so, and there are quite a few of the other youngsters who are coming along that are expected to be even better this year. And then you add in the freshman class that is coming in. You're already seeing a couple of those guys get opportunities right now. So I mean, yes, that's what you hope, and you hope you can see in every sport is the ability to keep the young talent around and watch it improve. It's harder and harder to do in these days of NIL and the transfer portal. But one thing I wanted to mention, I see a lot of people that are concerned that Auburn isn't investing enough in basketball. There are a lot of people that for some reason feel like Auburn's poor NIL-wise. Justin Hokanson wrote the other day that his sources tell him that Auburn is in the upper third of the SEC as far as NIL, in the $12 million range or so for basketball NIL. That's not poor in college basketball.
You don't assemble this roster. And I mean,
they weren't all big names, though, Dan. That's where a lot of people feel like Auburn's poor. Look at the job Bruce Pearl did. And, you know, for his tenure, his ability to go find guys that may not necessarily have been the biggest name, but came in and were really able to contribute and fit in. And that's what this roster felt like, but they just had to do it with 10 of them instead of 3 or 4.
I mean, I guess there's the chance that Chad Baker-Mazzara left for more money somewhere else, but there was more going on behind the scenes, you always thought, than just...
Chad had already been paid, though, and was up to a certain point.
Yeah.
It's at some point, look, and I think we saw some of it in football this year as well, when there's an agreement or there's an offer that's been made and it's agreed on, and then somebody comes back in and tops it, how many times can you say, all right, we'll go over that again? You can't just keep doing it over and over again.
And look, and I understand folks second guessing that decision, because like there are times this year when I think this team has missed Chad Baker.
Oh, no doubt. Like there's no doubt about that.
But no, as far as like, I don't think you assemble this roster on a budget. Todd Pettiford was one of the top players when you look from an NBA standpoint. Todd Pettiford was one of, like, Tahad, Filon, and Kondo at Florida were like, and Boogie Flan's probably in that mix too, where it's mm-hmm. like you had four guys that were very seriously considering, do you want to stay in the NBA draft and go late first, early second, probably early second, or do you want to play another year of college basketball? Right. All four of those guys decided to
and
play.
And they didn't do it for nothing. And they didn't decide to stay in college for nothing, I can tell you that.
And the fact that Auburn got one of them tells me, like, that's not something you're doing if you're broke.
Right.
Keyshawn Hall led the Big 12 in scoring. There was a market for his services around the country. You don't land him.
Hey, a lot of people were surprised that Elijah Freeman wasn't at Tennessee or Kentucky.
You beat out some big-name programs for Elijah Freeman. That's absolutely right. And Keyshawn Murphy was one of the top returning rebounders, one of the top returning post players in the SEC. They desperately wanted to keep him at Mississippi State, and you found a way to you found a way to make a deal with him. Like, no, I think that, like, I would.
Abdul Bashir was the leading scorer in junior college last year.
If next year's roster, you know, if they're really struggling this offseason to replenish the roster where they need to, and if they can't keep some of these guys in-house, I would start to believe that there are money problems.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that a team with money problems assembled this roster.
No, like, I don't either.
I don't think so. It could be true, and that could be the case, and we see it on next year's team. Like, you see, like, oh, boy, they couldn't really keep so-and-so, and they really wanted to, but someone else made a bigger offer, or, oh, they wanted to go get this guy, but they couldn't land him, and someone else got him, and you're really struggling. And that won't – you know what? That excuse won't save Steven. If the team is struggling on the floor in year two, I don't think people will accept, well, you tried, but
no,
NIL
no,
kept
right.
you from – like, that won't save Steven. But no, I don't believe that money – problems led you to.
That's
to
not this. Why Auburn's 5-7 in the conference and 14-11 overall.
No, I think I would absolutely believe that Auburn's in the top half of the conference as far as what they invested into this year's men's basketball team.
Yep. All right, we need to get to our first break of hour number two. Don't forget, Jake Crane joins us at the bottom of the hour, so we still have a few minutes where you can join us, 334-321-1390 here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here with you on this Tuesday afternoon. Again, Auburn baseball coming up in about 35 minutes over at Plainsman Park. Looks like a good night for it. It's going to be a little cool before it's all over, but I mean – not bad at all for February.
Yeah, hopefully the pleasant weather continues. They were able to. We speculated last week. We're like, they might have to move this thing from Sunday because of the weather.
It was a good move. Good call.
Yeah, it was a good move. They weren't going to be able to get much baseball played.
No, it was nasty. It was nasty all day Sunday.
Yeah, probably weren't going to get many innings in on Sunday. So, and they were able to get both games played on Saturday with some extras, right, on Saturday as well. So
Auburn baseball, I don't think softball lost either, did they, over the weekend?
Yeah, good start for a couple of Auburn's teams there in on the diamond. And tonight, Cincinnati, hopefully a good crowd midweek, first midweek game of the year.
Yeah, that's right.
And on Mardi Gras on Fat Tuesday. So and you mentioned Auburn's doing some promotions for that with beads and hot dogs.
$2.50 hot dogs, $5 beer domestics, and then, they've got orange and blue beads they're giving away as well. So yeah, that ought to be a lot of fun over at the ballpark tonight.
I meant to ask you this when we were talking about baseball. The fella, because people have been asking me, first base opening day starter was the freshman who's Bingaman.
He's a guy that could pitch as well.
Yeah.
We haven't seen him on the mound yet.
What's the story there? Is there a thought he could actually be a guy maybe giving me some relief innings too?
I believe so. I mean,
and you didn't see that a couple years. I mean, I know it's not unprecedented in college baseball for position players, but you'd seen the specialization really come to the sport. And
well, Shohei, Otani's had an awful lot to do with, I think, give some guys maybe a little bit more of an opportunity because there have been quite a few guys that come along that can throw, that really do both or either, you know, they're either
one. Could really hit, right?
Like, yes, he could. He was a catcher.
Yeah.
He was known more for his power hitting catching, being a power hitting catcher than he was a pitcher. And you know, you see guys come along that either have power arms and they really can hit. And you know, a lot of times coaches or teams just feel like, well, you really need to concentrate on one so you can be better. But well, maybe some of these guys can still do both. So, yeah, Ethan Bingaman's a guy that could get that opportunity. I mean, I wonder, since he's not in the lineup tonight, if he might get an opportunity to throw a little bit. That would be cool. I'd like to see it.
Big, impressive athlete, right? Like, I thought this guy is you know.
I tell you what, Auburn doesn't look like the Auburn team a few years ago.
Okay.
You know, a few years ago, LSU would come in, and it's like, whoa, those guys are big. And you'd go, you know, Georgia, we saw, you know, you'd see some Tennessee.
Yeah, scrappy underdog
those
teams.
Those guys look like the monsters of the Midway that Bugs Bunny plays against. You know,
the Monstars. Yeah,
yeah, you know, those. But Auburn would have guys that they looked like ball players, but they were not nearly as stout. Auburn's got more guys that I mean are 6'2", 200 plus pounds.
A couple years ago, Auburn looked like actual little leaguers.
Yes.
And the guys for Tennessee and LSU look like Danny Almonte, right? The fake birth certificate.
Yeah, no
little,
kidding.
Little leaguers, and it's like, yeah, now Auburn's. You're right. They seem to have emphasized, and some of that's starting young, right? Being able to go and invest in and being able to offer the opportunity for playing time to guys like Bub and Chris and Chase Frelick.
Guys like that, for a few years, Auburn didn't recruit because they were thinking, are they going to go? They're going to go sign pro contracts, and Auburn didn't have the facilities. And I think they at times sort of undersold what they had. Mm-hmm. But I mean, now Auburn can match whatever anybody else can.
You can get to the draft.
That's exactly right.
You can spend three years
in this league, and you know. Yeah. You've got a chance to go really high,
and that's something that, I mean, a couple of years ago, even as recently as a couple of years ago, the thought was you're probably better off starting your pro career as early as possible.
Yeah, now you can make as much money as most minor leaguers, more money than minor leaguers, and you're in a better situation
and get an education.
Yes, you're in a better situation. The travel,
quality of life.
Absolutely, quality of life. Where, I mean,
the creature comforts.
Your living quarters where, you know, you're not having to pay for where you're living either. I mean, you know, some of these guys that are in the minors, it's tough riding buses and staying in some of the places that they do, making the trips. The quality of life, travel and room and board and everything taken care of. And, you know, you're around a whole lot of other folks your age.
Shorter season too. I mean, compared to college baseball season, compared to minor league baseball. I mean, there are a lot of benefits now to allow. I mean, NIL obviously the biggest change.
And I don't think professional baseball minds at all. I mean, we've seen sort of trimming back of minor leagues. And it's sort of a shame. You're seeing some minor league towns, you know, no longer have teams, but it makes sense for the major league teams to have these players have this type coaching and experience and be ready to make that move and be closer to the majors when they're coming out of college.
And while it is disappointing to see any minor league organization go away, I would say most of America lives within driving distance of a Division I baseball game.
That's probably
like, right. There are exceptions. There are probably some crowded areas where there aren't D1 sports. Florida Panhandle.
Yeah, that's right?
Like
true.
There are some fairly crowded areas where D1 sports are probably a couple of hours away. But most of the country lives, especially baseball
and basketball. Most of the country either lives within a decent drive of D1 or Major League Baseball.
Right, and if you have Major League Baseball, like you probably are in a city that has D1 baseball too. Like if you really want to go see if you want the smaller park and the more intimate experience, if you're missing the minor league experience. So yeah, it's a bummer, but I think that's sort of a natural progression. It was the threat of a real NBA minor league system going and getting the top prospects like baseball that really, I think, got a lot of people to change their tune about NIL. Like the thought that once college basketball coaches realized they might have to compete against the NBA for recruits, they realized, okay, the rules need to change about what we can offer these kids because it needs to be like the NBA.
Yeah, well, I mean, the G League was keeping players from going to college, and now colleges are paying much more than the G League.
Exactly. Like once the G League Ignite was threatening to poach the top prospects from college basketball,
not just threatening, they were doing it.
Once they were doing it, it was like, all right, well, you were going to have you're going to have a mess on your hands if the rules didn't change. And college basketball sort of embraced that change. I think college baseball has embraced that change as a way to keep some players that would have otherwise gone in the draft to maybe consider playing college athletics.
Yeah, no question. And you know, to the thoughts of where minor league, you know, the minor league teams that have sort of disappeared are the single A and the some of the rookie leagues. You know, when you get to the panhandle, at least you've got Pensacola.
Yeah.
You've got double A ball, and some of those facilities are really, really nice.
And there's great JUCO ball in Florida too, if you're really a sicko for live baseball. Like there's some of the best junior college baseball in the country being played at Northwest Florida State and Chipola and Pensacola and Tallahassee, Panama City. Like there's some, you know, some of that, you know, it's been attracting. I mean, Auburn has.
Oh yeah, Auburn has dipped into those schools quite a bit over the years.
I think Auburn's seen that as a benefit to be that close to some of the top junior colleges in the country.
Yep. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Half an hour to go, and Jake Crane joins us on the other side. So stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Bill Cameron slipping out a little bit early. He's going to go to the ballpark. Auburn and Cincinnati tonight, a little Fat Tuesday baseball for Butch Thompson and the Tigers. First midweek game of the season after Auburn swept the Penguins of Youngstown State this past weekend, including the Saturday doubleheader with the weather on Sunday. But Auburn getting ready to go to Texas. They're playing in the event this weekend at Globe Life with a couple other major conference opponents. And they got a tune-up tonight against Cincinnati out of the Big 12. I'm slowly getting used to identifying Cincinnati as a Big 12 team, but Auburn will play the Bearcats tonight. $2.50 hot dogs for Mardi Gras. They'll also have orange and blue beads. So get out to the ballpark if you get the chance. We'll have that for you on Wings 94.3. Our buddy Jason Caldwell is going to be on the call with Brad Law, with Andy out in Starkville, getting ready for tomorrow night's big, big showdown between Auburn and Mississippi State. That game we'll have for you on Wings 94.3 as well. Tomorrow night, Auburn basketball feels like a must win. I know you don't want to throw those kind of you don't want to get hyperbolic with it and start throwing around too much overemphasis. Right? I'm selling you guys wolf tickets or something. But the fact is, I think for Auburn, you're not on the bubble yet. A loss in Starkville to a Mississippi State team that drilled Ole Miss in Oxford over the weekend would probably put you promptly, it would put you squarely on the bubble with some tough games the rest of the way. So I think for Auburn, even though they played that really tough non-conference schedule, and that will matter if you're talking about a 17 or 14 team or a team that didn't have a winning record in SEC play, wins over St. John's and NC State in the non-con and wins over teams like Florida and Arkansas in SEC play, like that will matter, but you can't stumble down the stretch and lose to some of these teams that are not in the NCAA tournament, like Mississippi State. So tomorrow night in Starkville, a huge one for Auburn, for Stephen Pearl and the gang, and we'll see if Keyshawn Hall is back in the lineup. And let's welcome into the broadcast from Crane and Cohen, our good buddy Jake Crane, joining us in the second hour on Tuesdays. How you doing, Jake?
I'm doing good, Dan. It ain't hyperbolic. You got to go win this one.
Right?
The fact that Auburn's still an 8 seed at this point, that shocked me seeing it. As tough as the schedule's been, and it's been brutal, sitting there, what are they, 14 and 11?
Say that again, Jake. You cut out for a second.
Yeah, they're what, 14-11?
Yeah, that's, I mean, Auburn is, the overall win-loss record is not all that impressive. Losing record in the SEC. Now, you can look and say, like they don't have, I mean, the worst loss on the resume is at home to Texas A&M, right? And Texas A&M's a tournament team.
I mean, Auburn's got a bunch of good losses, but, like, so does Germany. I mean, at the end of the day. Like,
and they're not going to make, and they're not going to be in the NCAA tournament.
They're not making the World War podium for the gold, for sure.
No, Germany is, they've been on the bubble for decades. I would say.
They've been on the bubble. They got in a couple times and got bounced.
I
think they made it to the second round once.
I would say with Auburn, like, you're absolutely right. Like, they don't have bad losses. That could change. Like, if you're still talking about an Auburn team without a lot of bad losses between now and the SEC tournament, Auburn's probably fine. Like, Auburn's probably they're an NCAA tournament team. Maybe they've played their way out of the 8-9 line. We'll see. But if you start talking about losses to Mississippi State and South Carolina and LSU and Oklahoma, possibly.
Well, you're on the edge, Dan. That's the thing. You're on the edge. So, like, it's going to go one or two ways. I would be shocked if Keyshawn Hall didn't play tomorrow night. I will say, I think it shows the type backbone that Stephen Pearl has, that he was willing to sit Keyshawn if he's not going to do it the way he wants to do it. But yeah, I mean, make no mistake, Auburn's got to win the ones that are even and above, and then you can make the argument, like you said, oh well, you got all these good losses. The problem is, you know, you can't water down the good losses, and you got a chance to get a couple more good wins. And I mean, this four-game stretch from Auburn, you know, if you go 3-1, I still think you're fine. But you go 4-0, and again, I know four games is a lot, especially in this league. But you go 4-0, you're in the tournament, and you're not having to go into the SEC tournament weekend, having to win a couple games to get in the NCAA tournament. So, you know, again, we felt like that before the season, the conference number was 9, that would get you there. And you couple that with 18, 19, 20 wins, you know, Auburn not only is in, but you're probably looking at a 6 or a 7 seed. So as much as it feels like the sky's falling here lately, there's still plenty of time to save it. But to Steven's point, like, the distractions got to stop. Like, grow up, Peter Pan. Like, you guys get paid now. I don't want to hear anything else about, oh, not giving effort or this, that, and the other. If you're not going to do it, it's like John Summerall said on an interview today, if you're not going to act like a pro, you'll never be a pro. So, you know, get out of my face.
Well, and with Keyshawn Hall, like, I think it would be it would be particularly troubling if this thing were to bleed over into tomorrow night, right? Whatever's going on, and I, you know, I'd love to get your thoughts on it, Jake. Where I feel uncomfortable deciding, like, did Steven act irrationally or not without knowing what happened, right? Like, without having like context here. I think Steven knew how important Keyshawn was to the effort Saturday night and sat him down anyway, so it must have been significant enough. And I keep coming back to, like, Keyshawn Hall's a senior. He's playing his last 6 weeks of college basketball or whatever it is. Steven's got multiple players that could be back next year. He's got a program to run, and he's got that to consider as well when he's deciding how to handle in-house sort of disciplinary measures. But it would be, I mean, you're talking about 6 games left in the regular season. If Keyshawn Hall misses another one, like, it would, you know, you start wondering when or if this thing is going to end. And I don't think Auburn has the firepower. Even some of these non-tournament teams on the schedule, you know, going to Starkville tomorrow night's a great example. Without Keyshawn Hall, I wonder if Auburn has the offensive firepower to beat these teams in the SEC, or if they could
especially
play their way
for 40 minutes, right? Yeah. Especially for 40 minutes.
No, you'll be. You know, you're not in Bubble Town yet. You can see Bubble Town from Starkville, right?
Like, yeah, you'll be the chick from the Wizard of Oz or whatever in the bubble before it's said and done. If you go lose to Mississippi State, I'll say this for Keyshawn
Delinda?
Hall at this point. For Keyshawn Hall at this point to be suspended, which is what it was, not only a game, but really the most important minutes at home against a Vanderbilt team that if you beat, you're probably about as close to in the NCAA tournament as anybody that's not sitting like 22-2 right now. So, you know, it's at some point it had to be something serious. And look, the best coaching advice I think there is you can always start out harder and get easier. You can never start out easy and get harder. And I think that's what Steven's having to lay down this first year. I think that's what he's having to do. And at the end of the day, it's a brand new team. And let's be honest, Keyshawn Hall's never played in the NCAA tournament. And he's played on more teams than Stephen's coached at. So, you know, I know the common denominator in one, but that you'd be crazy to say that Auburn doesn't need Keyshawn or that he wouldn't be huge. It changes the whole game plan, not only for Auburn, but who's ever having to defend him. So he obviously wants him to play. But, yeah, I mean, to this point, you know, you've got to establish a culture of your own. You can't just sit here and try and cater to who's ever playing the best. You'll never get out of that hole.
Well, that Vanderbilt game really was something, too, because Keyshawn Hall, it was his worst game of the season before Stephen made the call to bench him for the final 13 minutes or so of the game. You know,
well, you can't be a scorer that's bad at defensively and not score.
Right.
Like, I'm just like, you can't, you know, I can live with you maybe not being the best defender if it's not an effort thing, but you can't just be an offensive guy and not provide offense. You can come down and sit over here and be offended next to me on the bench.
Yeah, you can be one-dimensional, but non-dimensional players tend to end
up as... you better be that dimension.
Non-dimensional players tend to end up as spectators, right? Like, they tend to end up being like...
Yeah, well, you know they say the guys who can't play anymore coach, the guys who can't play anymore and can't coach, they referee, so you got to pick one.
Yeah, so for Keyshawn, and I was really interested to see, like, the impact of not having Keyshawn for a full game, like the experiment, because Auburn did outscore Vanderbilt without Keyshawn Hall in the final 13 minutes of that game last week, and I'm familiar with Ewing theory and the thought that there are times in basketball when a ball dominant offensive player sits down and it opens up the offense for the other guys, and you see guys take a step forward without him. You did not see that Saturday. You did not see Auburn off.
Yeah, no, I mean, Auburn doesn't have another Keyshawn Hall offensively, even with Pettiford getting better. It's just it's a different matchup. It's a different nightmare. And that's one of the things with this roster. You got something from Keyshawn Murphy. There just isn't enough. Elijah Freeman isn't far along enough yet. Obviously, Magwood is not there. I mean, he hasn't, sniffed the court in a while. When you're having to play, and listen, I'm all for effort and walk-ons and this, that, and the other, but when Blake Michalik and Simon Walker are having to play, I don't think we're in a great spot if we're not up 30 with the last 45 seconds on the clock. Yeah. So at this point, you're beholden to the players that you have. That's why I think you can really start judging Stephen based on the rosters he's going to put together in the future, because he was – even though he was on the staff, he was dropped on this planet not being the head guy with the toughest schedule in the country and no post players, really. Like, it's tough. I think that's why there needs to be a little bit of grace given to Stephen Pearl, because he was put in a really tough position. I don't care if you're the defensive coordinator or not.
And you can tell yourself that, you know, in the world that we don't know, like in the path we didn't take, where Bruce Pearl coaches this team, right? Like, you can say, well, Bruce Pearl would have this team looking like heavyweight champions right now.
I think Bruce would have got Janai back from the G League like Nate did with Betty Aka, to be honest with you.
You know, but I think that like this team, no matter who's coaching them, I think it's important to remember, like, you're seeing a team with no continuity from last year. One guy's back.
Yeah.
He was the freshman point guard coming off the bench. Everyone else came in from the portal or came in, you know, through recruiting. I have to imagine, maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but it is continuity in college basketball is such a luxury now. It was the secret weapon of teams like Auburn and Florida and Alabama and Tennessee last year, that they didn't just have good players. They had good players that had played several seasons together, that had been through the fire together for multiple years. And that's why for Auburn, like, this season's going to be it's gonna be difficult the rest of the way. Maybe they can win some games. Maybe they can make the tournament. We'll see. Next year, I would hope Stephen's not starting over with 10 new players. Like, that would represent.
If that happened, then like something terrible happened. But again, like, without experience, and I think a lot of people think experience is just like playing good. Like, oh, we're playing good because we have experience playing together. Well, where experience really helps you is with overall consistency through the ups and downs throughout the year. Mm. like, even if you go back to the games last year where Auburn didn't play well, they had such great continuity and chemistry, they knew they could dig themselves out of that hole because they've done it before, right? This team doesn't – they have no equity built up. Like, it's just random guys – or not random, but a brand-new team that was put together, and they didn't go through any of this. So when you're like, how can Auburn play like this one night and then play like this the next night? How can the effort defensively be this good, or they can battle back this night but not this night? It's because they're literally going through the process right now. But for a lot of these guys, you're only going to get one crack at this thing. So, yeah, experience is huge. In a world full of the transfer portal and free-for-all and freedom to roam, continuity is king. Go look at Indiana's football team that just won the Natty. Yeah, they had a new quarterback, but they've had guys that have played together since they were at JMU. Like, it matters. Like, it really matters. And it's tough to put experience into someone without them experiencing it. You can't. You just have to hope you're talented enough to get away with it for long enough.
How about a hard pivot to football real quick before we let you go, Jake? Because I do feel like what you just explained is a strategy that coaches are going to pursue whenever they can in basketball. The thought of being able to not just start over with not do the fantasy draft every offseason, right? Where you go get whoever you can out of the portal. Like, if you can avoid that by returning contributors, it's huge. Alex Golish switched teams, right, from USF to Auburn, but still seems like he's going to have returning contributors that he can count on.
Yeah.
Not just guys that are back from last year's Auburn team, but guys that he saw play together under him at USF.
No, without a doubt. It's a great point. And I think, to me, it shrinks the learning curve, especially depending on the position. And when you look at the positions of the players that he's bringing in, it's quarterback, it's running back, it's wide receiver, it's center, right? It's nickel. It's safety. It's young corner. It's like these are super important positions that obviously matter on game day. And that's why when we did our portal breakdown of what Auburn brought in, I'm like, I think what he did, and smartly and rightly so, was take the best proven parts of South Florida that he knows will translate because he's been in this league before. He's seen the monster come out of the cage. He brought the best young guys that he think they got a steal on at South Florida. And then outside of that, he went to the portal and got other guys and did a good job, I think, from a retention standpoint for the most part. I that's the smartest way to do it. And again, I will cite Indiana. Not that Auburn's going to go 16-0 or go 11-1 this year, but if you want to try and break in the best way, the quickest way, why not take the best players you have at the biggest positions of need to kind of curve that learning curve, to so to speak. So, I thought he was very surgical. I thought he was very meticulous. But I thought overall, philosophically, he was 100% spot on. And I think you're going to see this Auburn team be a little bit further ahead than what typically a brand new coach in a new place with a new roster would be, i.e., the basketball team, even though Stephen Pearl has been at Auburn, he hadn't been the head guy.
Fantastic stuff. As always, Jake, we're out of time, so let everybody know where they can find you.
Yeah, really easy. Just go to YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. It's Crane and Cone, C-R-A-I-N and Cone. You can find us there.
Jake Crane from Crane and Cone, as always, we appreciate getting to talk to you in hour number two. Great stuff. We will take a break, and we'll be back to wrap things up. You're listening to the Tuesday edition of The Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros.
And AU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Wrapping things up on the Tuesday edition of The Drive, Dan Peck in the studio. Wings 94.3 will have baseball tonight with Brad Law and our buddy Jason Caldwell, who's on the show tomorrow. He'll be talking Auburn-Cincinnati baseball. They'll be previewing Auburn-Mississippi State basketball and talking about everything else going on in the world of Auburn sports and a whole lot more. You can catch that tomorrow on The Drive. You can catch Auburn baseball tonight over on Wings 94.3. You can catch Auburn men's basketball tomorrow night on Wings 94.3. as well. Big thanks to everybody who called in. Big thanks to Jake Crane for giving us some time in hour number two. Everybody who listens, and Bill Cameron, who is enjoying some Mardi Gras baseball right now, including $2.50 hot dogs there at Plainsman Park. So really appreciate everybody for tuning in. We will talk to you again tomorrow. Dan Peck signing off. Good night.